Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Keep those text messages coming in. We're getting a lot of reaction across a wide variety of topics that we've been talking about over the course of the show today. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. The Vancouver Canucks introduced their Abbotsford team today. This is a shared pass now. We mentioned this before with the Calgary Flames. Now they both had farm teams there. The Flames did not have the same name of their team in Abbotsford. They had a related name, the Heat. Hey, it's related to Flames. And this is kind of where I was going. I like that as opposed to we're going to do the exact same name. And as one of our texters pointed out, hey, this isn't unprecedented. There are other teams around the National Hockey League that do this. Are you okay?
Oh, my God. There's a bird in my house. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. All right.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
There's a bird on my television. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
All right. So I'm going to conduct this segment while you try to avoid a bird that has flown in your window. Karen is going to leave the microphone, and I hope to update you in a very positive way as to what happens here. I hope the bird leaves the house. I hope it's just visiting, and then we can move on. I knew we were going to talk Blue Jay at some point this segment. I don't think it's a Blue Jay that's in your house. Karen is trying to avoid the bird. Have you had an experience like this? You're free to weigh in, 960, 960, 650, 650. I have had this happen to me before, and for those who don't know, I'm not broadcasting from my mom's basement this week, but not that far off. First time I've been able to see my mother in a year, her first opportunity to see my children in a year. I think a lot of you out there are experiencing that. So I'm broadcasting from her house. And there was a time about 25 years ago where I was at this location and a bird flew in and I had to try to figure out how to get it out of the house. So I do understand what Karen is going through right now. Not my weirdest encounter with some sort of animal coming into the space that I live in or inhabit, but I will get to that in a second. Are you okay? You're smiling as I can see on FaceTime. It sounds like this ended well.
Oh my goodness, that was one of the most, I don't want to say frightening, it was just like a little sparrow, but it, you know, you're sitting here doing the show. My boyfriend's had this place for like, I don't know, 20 some odd years. I've lived here for 2 years now. I've never had a bird fly in our balcony door. We leave it open all the time, Scott. I've never had a bird fly in. And of course, during the middle of the show, all of a sudden I see a bird right in front of me on my television. It's going back and forth between my kitchen window and the TV. It's probably just as scared as I am. It eventually, I took a towel and kind of ushered it out of the window. But oh my goodness, that was something I've never experienced. That is live radio. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it certainly is. We had a call on the text line for it. Leave the mic open. Leave the mic open. Greg, shut your mic down just in case there may have been the odd profanity if the bird had flown close to you or had touched you in any way. But I'm glad you're okay, Karen. I'm glad you are okay. Like, I've had a few bats flying around over the years. It's way worse. LOL, says this texter. We need pictures, says someone else.
This might be enough
to make
me drive
back. That was the best thing on this.
To go to the station, Scott.
All right. You're out. I'm glad that this ended well. I can tell when I was back in university back in the day, so I lived in a residence and there were, I don't know, 24 people on a floor, approximately 100 people in the house that I lived in. And at our lounge, so there's this common gathering area, as there are in a lot of residences, that's where you would go back in those days to go watch TV. And there's a big fridge in there where you could store. So I think a lot of people out there are familiar with this. We went to go into the lounge one day and a squirrel was in there.
Oh, no.
And the squirrel's sitting on the couch just looking at me. And I'm looking back at the squirrel. And nobody quite knows what to do. Now, I don't know if somebody had left food out and the squirrel had been attracted by that. But the squirrel was there. The squirrel had come in there with nobody in the room and thought, all right, I'm just going to have a good time. I get there. This is not a good time. It's uncomfortable for both of us at this point. What do? They're fast. Like, squirrels are fast. And while we look at them as extremely cute and docile creatures for the most part and pretty fun running around the forest, when they're in your own environment and they're as quick as they are, you're not quite action to take it. So it became pretty much a standoff. Me standing there looking at the squirrel, The squirrel's standing there looking at me. The window's open. Are you going to leave? You should leave. This is where I live. This isn't where you live. I don't come to your home. Are you going to go? Eventually, the squirrel left. It ended much the same way that the bird incident has just ended with you here. But it was an uncomfortable few minutes.
Yes. I mean, you're just like, well, what do I do if I can't get this thing out of here? That's what I'm thinking, because it was going between, it was attracted to the window. It can see the sunlight from the kitchen, which is right beside where I'm sitting. The TV is right beside another window, but it just couldn't figure out where the actual door was to get out. And you're thinking to yourself, like, this is a really cute bird, but what if it does start to come after me? And I mean, I've got a towel that I'm holding up. I don't want to hurt the bird. I don't want to have to deal with a dead bird. I don't want to have to deal with any of those things. So it scared the crap out of me. As you can tell, live radio, we got a text in saying Scotty and friends. On the show, we had a friend on the show, Scott. That would be our bird, but I guess that's that gave me a bit of a shock. I apologize. It's not something that happens every day, but again, live radio. Someone said having to do the beer mile, now getting attacked by a sparrow. Hell of a week, Karen, and it's only Wednesday.
Karen, look out!
Jeez. Okay, back
well, I'm gonna
to
suggest,
hockey or baseball.
And this is a throwback. This goes a long way back. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I'm going to suggest, based on what you felt was a harrowing couple of minutes there, you don't watch Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds tonight. Maybe not a movie for you.
No, I'm not. I already have issues with crows and been dive-bombed from them multiple times, which is a common thing if you used to live or you do live in downtown Vancouver. Happy it wasn't a crow, because we do have a couple crow's nests out there. And I have been concerned because some of the trees grow into our balcony, Scott. I thought that squirrel could happen because we have a lot of squirrels in the area. Nope, just a little sparrow. Well, I closed the door. It's not going to happen for the rest of the show, so we are good to move on. Goodness gracious.
All right, it's been a good couple of days for Major League Baseball. There was a Blue Jay involved, not the bird that flew into your house. We'll get to him in just one second. Shohei Ohtani was a part of it as well. Wanted to get this clip in earlier, but we weren't able to. Rick Ankiel was on in Toronto today, and here's why I want to play this clip. Mm-hmm. Shohei Ohtani, as we've talked about many times, is doing something we haven't seen since Babe Ruth, and doing things that none of us have experienced in our lifetime at the major league level. Rick Ankiel was a different story. Rick Ankiel, he could throw it, and as we found out later, he could hit it as well. And it's one of the things people who aren't close to baseball often say, well, hey, when a kid's growing up, your best pitcher is often your best player. And that's the kid who's hitting in the cleanup spot, and he's your best pitcher in a lot of little league teams. Why doesn't that continue? It has to do with specialization, money, all of that sort of thing. Rick Ankiel started his career as a pitcher, then all of a sudden couldn't find the plate, and he was a closer, and he was really good, and couldn't find the plate, so he went and reinvented himself and made it back to the major leagues as a hitter. So he was on 590 in Toronto today, and he was asked if he ever considered doing both at the big league level. Did he want to do it? And then spun that into the way that Shohei Ohtani is pulling this off.
It definitely crosses your mind, but as you mentioned, it just nobody was doing it. And I went to Tony La Russa and, you know, in joking manner said, hey, I want to play left today, or I want to play right. And he would always come back with something smart, something in the fashion of, hey, we're still trying to win today, you know, beat it. So it just people didn't really take you serious. I think, you know, for Shohei, it was just perfect timing. He's already doing it at a high level and being really successful at it in Japan. And then the landscape of baseball changing, where starting pitchers are really were only going five innings over the last couple of years, and they weren't seeing the lineup the third time through. You start looking at all these things from a workload standpoint, and I think it's just the perfect storm. Now, don't get me wrong, it takes somebody tremendously talented to pull this off, because there's been other guys along the way. You have Brendan McKay, who was drafted by Tampa Bay. I think one thing that happens when you have guys who are two-way players, maybe say in college, or even high school, is that one skill will develop faster than the other, right? So let's say that their pitching talent develops faster than hitting. The team's not going to want to wait another 2 years to bring you up, right? They want to get you to the big leagues and let that pitching career start so it can help them win. So if your hitting is, say, a year or 2 years behind, they might tell you to scrap it because they're not going to wait on you to develop that in the minor leagues before you can go up there and help them.
I do like the point that he pointed out that this is kind of the ripe time in Major League Baseball for this to happen, and the fact that pitchers are not throwing, you know, seven, eight, starters, 7, 8, 9 innings, that 100 pitch count, that 120 pitch count. It's just not happening anymore. So it's a perfect storm in that. I do just want to say too, like, I got to give props to the Angels, and I don't give props to the Angels too much because they've basically, you know, Mike Trout has just flundered. He's been great, but that organization has been terrible in building around him. But they were one of the organizations to only say to Shohei Ohtani, look, you be you in the majors. We're going to bring you over and allow you to do that. Maybe down the road, they thought, and they do still think, that he will choose one or the other. But right now, they're allowing him to flourish in the role that he has. I will give them props for letting him do that.
Did you see what else the Angels did this week? We don't talk a lot about the Major League Baseball draft. We talked about it more last year because of the unique nature of what the baseball season was and how it was just a 5-round draft last year. The Angels this week drafted 20 pitchers. There are 20 rounds in the Major League Baseball draft. They selected a pitcher in every single round. It's the only position that they selected. Yes, some were relievers and some were starting pitchers where they're at right now in their careers. They selected 20 pitchers. They did not go outside of that.
I mean, I guess if you're playing the odds, Scott, the odds are that you're probably going to get 1-2 decent players out of that that are going to make it to the bigs. I was trying to think. I'm like, yeah, like NHL draft, 7 rounds. It wouldn't be a surprise if a team drafts 7 forwards, if that's a need. Probably not as much as 7 defensemen, but there's been drafts where you could say, okay, you know, a team's drafted 7 players. But again, that's 7 players. Maybe 8 if you have more, maybe less if you have left draft picks, but 20 pitchers. Every single one of your draft picks is the same position. I don't know if that's they looked at their organization and said, heck, we don't have enough of this in the minors. We need to just load up on it. Obviously, that's what they did look at, but it just strikes me as something that we've just never seen. It's just so bizarre.
Yeah, it is bizarre. It's a calculated strategy, and they rolled with it. It's interesting to try to compare that to other sports because the Major League Baseball draft goes on for so long, and we know most of those prospects don't pan out at the Major League level, and there are varying levels of success depending on what sport we go to. Is it like drafting 7 defensemen? Is it like drafting 7 goalies? A goalie in every single round, or is that a little bit too specialized? I think it's beyond, like, it's not quite as strange as it would be if you drafted 7 quarterbacks. Is it more akin to drafting 7 defensive backs in football and saying we stuck with that position and we just took corners and safeties?
Yeah, I think defensive backs would be an interesting one. Offensive linemen, I don't think would be as weird because that's a position that I think a lot of teams strive to have a lot of depth at that, Scott. Maybe wide receivers, you need a lot of dynamic talent. So if you're going to make a big bet going in, I think quarterbacks would be quite up there with this. Like, could you imagine a team drafting 7 quarterbacks? To me, that strikes me as odd as drafting 20 pitchers in a draft.
Yeah, and they would never do it simply because you count on your NFL draft picks to play the next season for the most part. Like, there are a couple of them that might not make your roster, but that's one of the great things about the NFL draft. And you're drafting older players is that somebody you take in the 5th round, you're like, yeah, that person is likely going to start for us, or they're going to come in a dime package, or maybe they play special teams and they work their way into a starting role, but that player is going to contribute. Whereas in Major League Baseball, I don't know, we might never even see any of these guys. We might never get a contract done with some of them.
No, we might not, but I guess the Angels are trying to address an issue that they think. I mean, hey, the Angels organization, when was the last time they made the playoffs, Scott? And when was the last time they had a team that even competed for a playoff spot? So if this is the issue that you think you have moving forward that you want to address to try and get to the next level, hey, I'm all for it because you've got one of the best players to ever play baseball in Mike Trout on your roster. You've got the best young dynamic star, some will argue, on your roster as well. Let's get them in the playoffs. If it's 20 pitchers that get you there, I'm all in for it.
So while we're talking baseball and we transition that conversation into hockey, Vladimir Guerrero was the other big story this week. Shohei Ohtani on Monday, he was the starting pitcher last night, he hit last night, but Vladdy wins All-Star Game MVP. Vladdy is a legacy player, and a lot's been made of that with some of the Blue Jays prospects they've got that have now turned into Major League players. Kevin Biggio obviously is a legacy player, Bo Bichette is a legacy player, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., yes, by virtue of the name, it's pretty obvious he is a legacy player, and we know about his Hall of Fame father. It got me thinking about legacy players currently in the National Hockey League. There are a lot of them, but there aren't a lot of star/upper echelon legacy players right now. So for the purpose of this conversation, the father had to play in the National Hockey League, and now the son is currently playing in the National Hockey League. Some have aged out, some have seen their careers dissipate a little bit or where their stock is. Who are the top five legacy players right now in the National Hockey League? And you can base this on the totality of their career if you want, Karen, or you can base it on what we're coming off of and where we sit this summer in terms of what their season was last year. Who are the top five legacy players in the National Hockey League in your estimation?
Do we do Matthews, Brady as one, or are those, can we put them as
They're
one, two?
Two okay. different players, though they come from the same lineage.
So obviously, Matthew and Brady Tkachuk are 1-2 for me. Just when you look at where their careers are right now, where they are projected to be, and what their dad Keith did. You could go with William Nylander and Michael Nylander. Their two careers, there's another brother in there. So if you want to add to the legacy, Alexander Nylander. But of course, it's William Nylander for me right now. I guess you'd probably have to go to Sam Reinhart as the next. So that's number four for me. And the fifth one was a little difficult because I'm trying to go about players right now. I'm probably going to go with Max Domi just because the popularity of his dad, you know, different NHL career, you know, not the goal scorer, not the exciting offensive player, but, you know, the tough guy, the sucker punches, the penalty minutes. Like, that's how we remember Ty Domi. And then Max Domi, yes, you know, six NHL seasons. He's on his third different team, but I'm looking at players that are more in their prime right now versus players like a Paul Stastny, who probably is one of the best legacy players, but he's kind of aging out where his career is.
Yeah, and there's a few of the players that are like him. Like Paul Stastny a few years ago, I think we would have put in the top five. Zach mm-hmm. Parise is a legacy player. A few years ago, we would have probably had him in the top five. Nick Foligno, for different reasons, never a big offensive producer, but we know what an important piece of that Columbus team he was. He was the captain of that team. I've got Sean Couturier on my list. At the top, I would put Brady Tkachuk. I would actually put Sean Couturier second. And nobody knows much about his father, but his dad played in the National Hockey League. I would have Couturier second. We're talking about a perennial Selke contender. Not much under a point per game over the last mm-hmm. few seasons. He's right there in and around point per game while providing the defensive production that he does. We're talking about a guy that is in conversations for Team Canada anytime you're putting together a roster and the role that he could play. So I'd have Sean Couturier second. Matthew Tkachuk had a down year. I think he's the third best legacy player right now. I think he has the potential to be better. I think Sam Reinhart is coming off a better year. William Nylander's coming off a better year. I'd put Nylander ahead of Reinhart on my list. Those would be my top five. I'd go Brady, then I'd go Couturier, then I'd go Matthew Tkachuk, I'd go Nylander, and then I would go Sam Reinhart. Another name that would have been on this list a couple years ago isn't there right mm-hmm. now and is looking for work right now. Tyson Barrie is not on this list.
Like, you look at this list 2 years ago when he was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs from the Colorado Avalanche, and the talk was, okay, you know, new team, what's he going to do on this team, the power play, all this kind of stuff, and we know what happened. The season fizzled out, whether it was coaching and he couldn't figure it out with Mike Babcock at the time, and whatever the situation was, he had a pretty decent season in Edmonton. He was brought in to be the first unit power play. He was replaced by Darnell Nurse, but the more the conversation is 2 years ago, he was a prize defenseman, Scott. Like, yes, Toronto got him. We were so happy to get him. And this year, I haven't heard his name mentioned once by people that we talk to about potential NHL free agents. Yes, he's a free agent come July 28th. And I don't know what kind of deal he's going to sign, and I don't know who's going to want him. But when you're talking about who's available right now, we're talking about Seth Jones, not a UFA, but still available. You know, Dougie Hamilton. Nick Letty, he's possibly going to be available from the New York Islanders. You've got now Ryan Suter. You've got Adam Larson that they're talking about in Edmonton and possibly re-signing there. But there's no conversation around this guy that 2 years ago was one of the more prized trade possessions in the NHL.
A lot of people thought he was landing in Vancouver. He thought he was landing in Vancouver based on a lot of rumors that were out there. The deal fell apart at the NHL draft 2 years ago, and as you just mentioned, he ended up in Toronto. And didn't that feel like a slam dunk for him career-wise? He's going to go to Toronto. He's going to play on a power play with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, John Tavares. His numbers are going to be similar, if not better, than they were in Colorado. And then he's going to hit the UFA market, and he is going to be a coveted asset, and he's going to cash in. Didn't happen. We all know Mike Babcock and Tyson Barrie, it didn't work. It never really worked that season. He took a bet on himself contract last year. So he bet on himself in Edmonton, and it didn't cost the Oilers very much, less than $4 million to get him on a one-year deal. And the offensive numbers are very good. Like Tyson Barrie had an excellent year offensively, 48 points in 56 games, 40 of those being assists. And yet he appears to be viewed right now as a product of those around him rather than part of the driving offensive force. That may not be fair to Tyson Barrie, but that appears to be the current perception.
And someone texts in, pretty decent season. Are we forgetting the fact that he led all NHL defensemen in points this season? That's a fair point, but my point is that he went to Edmonton to get the next contract, right? And whether he signed on with the Oilers going forward or whether he got a big deal somewhere else, that was the point. My point is, he had a good season. He had a decent season, whatever you want to use, but he's not being talked about in any sort of conversation. And I understand, and Mr. T texts in, the trendy asset now are big, hefty defensemen, and we look at what was able to do in Montreal, and we look what was able to do on the blue line in Tampa Bay Lightning. Heavy defensemen that can still move the puck, that are tough on the walls. Tyson Barrie has deficiencies on the defensive side. It just strikes me as odd when we talked about the legacy conversation and it led me to thinking, like, his name has not been out there at all.
So is he going to be viewed in much the same way Keith Yandle has been viewed the last few years? Is that where he's at? Where Keith Yandle can come to your team, he can help your power play, he's going to play most nights, he's available. Like, Tyson Barrie isn't a guy who's had this lengthy injury history. But somewhat limited and seen as an offensive defenseman as opposed to more of an all-around defenseman. Is that where it's headed for Tyson Barrie? Again, I'm not sure that's fair to him. He was viewed much differently in Colorado than he has been at the end of these last two seasons. He had a great year production-wise, but people go, you're playing with McDavid, you're playing with Draisaitl, you're just beefing up your point total. I don't think that's completely fair to Tyson Barrie. I'm just not sure where the fit is for him. He's going to find work. He's going to find work. I just don't know exactly where and how much he's going to make.
And I think that's the point, Scott. I mean, this was viewed as show me contract, 1 year, Edmonton. I'll go put up a ton of points because I am playing with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I just don't think in a flat cap era with all of these coveted free agents that are out there now, and more are going to shake free. I forget to mention, like, Nate Schmidt apparently is available for the Vancouver Canucks. He doesn't want to be here. They're trying to move him. So is it something where Seattle kind of takes him on because they're loading up on defensemen? I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work out. But for Tyson Barrie, it just strikes me as the decision to go to Edmonton is not going to pay off financially in the end for him.
Had a couple other suggestions here as far as legacy players go. Jake DeBrusk, yep, a name I consider. Yep. Certainly don't have him on the top five right now. This was a down year for Jake DeBrusk. We'll see if he's a member of the Boston Bruins moving forward. Someone else texting in, how about Adam Lowry? He's turned into a fairly integral part of his team. Again, a name I considered. Doesn't crack my top five, but a player that anybody would want on their roster. Adam Lowry is an excellent third-line center, and when used in that role, love him. He's not Sean Couturier at center ice, but he's an excellent center. Keep those texts coming in. Someone texted in Suter, as in Ryan. Ryan's uncle played in the NHL. That would be Gary, not his son. We went with father-son here. We can stretch that legacy if you want, and we can open the conversation a little more, but that's why Ryan Suter wasn't considered, certainly, for my list. We're going to head to Buffalo next. Interesting news about Jeff Skinner today. I don't know how much it impacts anything at all. Is it a sign of anything to come with the Sabres? And where are they at with the likes of Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel, players that want out of town? When might that happen? We'll head to Buffalo right after this on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
We've had breaking news on this show all week long. Had the Duncan Keith trade go down when you guys were doing the show, you and Jamie on Monday. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Thanks for joining us here today. Many of you weighing in, 650, 650, 960, 960. Just moments before the show yesterday, we had the Minnesota Wild buying out both Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. So a lot of things have been happening. John Horgan, the premier of BC, yesterday announcing, you know what, we might be in on the 2026 World Cup. We might actually put our foot forward. So we've had lots of breaking news. I didn't think the breaking news was going to be you today. A lot of people are weighing in on that because we had a break-in news, actually. It was break-in. It was a bird breaking into your home.
And Greg is trolling us, or trolling me specifically right now with Freebird. just playing as our intro music coming back from break. Yes, I had a bird fly into my living room about half an hour ago, landed on my television, decided to fly around from the kitchen back to the television. I think I reacted okay, but not exactly in the calmest manner. Like, it wasn't a situation, Scott, where I could just kind of let it play out. Like, I could just keep on going with the show while I'm watching this bird fly back and forth, because if it goes any further into my apartment condo, like, there's no way I'm getting it out probably alive. Maybe I open the door and it flies into the hallway and it's somebody else's issue. Like, that could have been a possibility that I could have done. It all ended on okay. The bird finally flew back out of the patio door. It has been since shut, so there will be no birds left in, or at least flying back into my condo this hour. Thank God. Oh, my goodness. Live radio.
We got a lot of comments on this. We have a lot of people sharing stories. We don't have time to get to those now, but we promise to get to them next segment. Oh. And for those of you who are just tuning into the program, maybe we'll give you a snippet of what transpired at the beginning of this hour. You mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show. Some of the news that came out today, I don't really know how significant it is. Jeff Skinner said, okay, I'll waive my no move clause to leave the Sabres. Should Seattle choose to take Jeff Skinner in the expansion draft? Why would Seattle take Jeff Skinner in the expansion draft, you might ask? It's a great question. How big would the sweetener have to be? Jeff Skinner has 6 years left, $9 million per season. The contract is an albatross. We all know this. Can he produce more than he did last season? Yes. Can he produce to the level of that contract? Seems unlikely at this point. And to get saddled with that term and that cap hit doesn't seem like a recipe for success. Jeff Skinner saying, I'd be willing to go elsewhere. I suppose that's a step in the right direction if you're looking to move the contract. My first question is, how big would the sweetener have to be? Is it Jack Eichel? But that's a lot of cap to take on. You're getting a great player. Is it Dylan Cousins? You're probably not giving that up now that you're moving on from Jack Eichel. First overall pick, would you package that to get rid of that contract if you're the Buffalo Sabres? Like, just how sweet would the sweetener have to be to get somebody to say, okay, I'm in?
No offense to the player, but I honestly don't know if there is a sweetener big enough for Seattle to take on that contract. Scott, $9 million. He had 7 goals, 14 points in 53 games this season. The more important part is he played 53 games this season, but obviously just continuing downward trend for this individual. Does a change of scenery help him? Maybe. Maybe he can find some skills, the skills that he had and production that he had a few years ago. But to me, it's just, okay, I'll waive it. This allows you to protect somebody else on your roster. That's all this is for me.
Lance Lysowski, reporter for the Sabres, who works for the Buffalo News, broke this story earlier today and joins us now to talk about the Buffalo Sabres, one of the teams you and I both identified, Karen, as a team that will define this NHL offseason. Lance, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. The news of the day is Jeff Skinner. Seems very unlikely Seattle would be interested in taking on Skinner's contract and bringing the player at $9 million per for the next 6 years. What is the significance of what Skinner did today from an organizational standpoint?
It's a move that allows them to protect another young forward. This team is on the precipice of another rebuild. We all know that Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart are on their way out of town. They're going younger, and the Sabres did not want to lose somebody like Anders Bjork or Rasmus Asplund, two young players that performed fairly well under Don Granato late last season. They factor into the Sabres' plans for next year. So, hey, with it being almost an absolute certainty that the Kraken want nothing to do with that Skinner contract, he exposes himself for the purpose of the expansion draft. Sabres can protect another young forward. Both sides are happy. And as much as that contract is an albatross at this point, I mean, the Sabres have, I mean, look, they're not going to come close to the cap ceiling anytime soon. The salary cap is an arbitrary figure for them right now. They're going into a rebuild, and Jeff Skinner is one of those guys who works well with young players, and hey, he's going to have to rebuild his value if the Sabres are ever going to escape that contract.
You're much closer to this team than we are, and everybody is watching the Sabres with a lot of anticipation, with Eichel in mind first, Reinhart in mind second, as far as potential offseason moves. What does your personal timeline look like for those deals going down?
I think with the Jack Eichel trade, I think with both, that Kevin Adams would love to have these done next week before the draft. So that would be between Wednesday when the expansion draft selections are announced and Friday when the Sabres are on the clock for number one overall. Buffalo wants to get back in the top 10. They want another top 10 pick to grab a player that, in a draft that they think other teams undervalue, the Sabres like a lot of the players at the top of this draft class. So, I mean, hypothetically, they can get Owen Power at number one, and they've got their eyes on some of the top forwards in this draft, including William Eklund, who, you know, you wonder how high up he's going to go. He could go as high up as three, so I wonder if there's really a fit there for Anaheim when it comes to the Jack Eichel sweepstakes.
Lance, one of the teams that's been mentioned, and you mentioned the fact they want to get back in the top 10, is the Anaheim Ducks. They've got a top pick. Of course, they've got some younger players that could potentially, if they wanted to go that route, send back in a trade. When you look at trading partners out there, are you leaning one way or another in terms of which kind of team has the front runner for Jack Eichel?
I would say the two teams that have the assets, that have the cap space, and are in desperate need for a player of Jack Eichel's talents are the Anaheim Ducks and the Los Angeles Kings. Now, I know the Kings have sort of put it out there that they're not as interested as people might think they are, but listen, these are two teams that desperately need to get back into that competitive window. There's an opportunity here to acquire a center that, when healthy, is among the top 5 to 10 in the National Hockey League. And they've got some really intriguing pieces that are a perfect fit for what the Sabres need. Buffalo wants a young center or a young forward with, you know, top six to, you know, first line upside. So when you look at Anaheim, Zegras is going to be on Buffalo's radar. When it comes to the Los Angeles Kings, it's Alex Turcotte, and I doubt that the Kings are going to be interested in moving Byfield. But the stars are aligned there. And that number three pick with the Anaheim Ducks is one I know the Sabres want badly. So I do think that a resolution is coming soon when it comes to the Jack Eichel situation, because teams – they know that that's an asset they're going to, that it would really help them acquire Jack Eichel at this point in time. I think that the Anaheim Ducks and the Los Angeles Kings are the two teams to watch here.
What do you think would the ask would be for a Sam Reinhardt? 40-point season last year. He's had 40 points or plus in all of his seasons, except for, say, that nine games in 2014-2015, obviously. And he had 25 goals this season, tied his career high. What do you think the ask would be for him in return?
A young player that can contribute in the NHL, you know, almost immediately, a prospect and probably a first-round pick. I know that sounds like a lot, but Sam Reinhardt showed that he can play center in the National Hockey League. He can play at a very high level. 25 goals, matching a career high in this shortened season, took his game to another level. I think that – I know that all the talk is about Jack Eichel, and certainly it should be considering the medical situation and – you know, him being an elite player, but I don't think we're talking enough about Sam Reinhardt. That's a guy who, a very smart general manager, and I know there's a few out there that they should really be pushing to acquire a guy like that, because the cap hit this coming season will be very manageable. He's a restricted free agent, so, I mean, maybe you try to sign him long-term this summer. Otherwise, you sort of kick the can down the road, but he's somebody with the continued progress he's made since he arrived in Buffalo when it comes to skating, his two-way game, I mean, becoming that really talented goal scorer, he's somebody that I think a contender should try to take advantage of right now and try to get him before, you know, of course, you could try to get him at the deadline, but right now I think that somebody needs to make a push to acquire somebody like that.
Lance Lysowski, the Buffalo News, talking Sabres with us today on Rintoul and Sermon. You mentioned Anders Bjork earlier. He was part of the Taylor Hall return, which the vast majority of the hockey world skewered Kevin Adams for, felt they didn't get enough for Taylor Hall. With that in mind, how much pressure is there on Adams to deliver in one of, if not both of these deals, including Eichel and Reinhardt?
These aren't easy trades to win, and let's face it, you're not winning either trade, at least in the interim. You're not going to get a player with equal or greater talents than either of those two, and even if the sum of its parts, you're not getting a victory from day one. But these are big trades for Kevin Adams. You can't fall on your face here, right? You can't be the general manager 10 years from now who traded Jack Eichel for peanuts. I mean, the Jason Botterill's mistake trading Ryan O'Reilly for the package that Buffalo received is going to be talked about by the fan base here for decades to come, because, of course, Ryan O'Reilly went on to win a Stanley Cup in St. Louis. Vladimir Sobotka, Patrick Berglund, and Tage Thompson, well, that really hasn't worked out for the Sabres so far. So this is big, and this is a trade that Kevin Adams knows he has to win. That's why the asking price is astronomical when it comes to Jack Eichel, and it's not much lower when it comes to Sam Reinhart.
So one of the things that the Sabres likely acquire when they move Eichel, and I know Reinhart is an RFA, but he was a $5 million cap hit, 5.2 prior to this season. They acquire cap space, and that is the big talking point with the Seattle Kraken. It's an asset that they can weaponize. It's the term that's come into the league in the last few years. Where is the confidence in the Sabres fan base right now that regardless of what the return is, the Sabres can be opportunistic in this flat cap environment once they move off of that salary?
It's certainly an option that Tevin Adams will need to take advantage of. He's going to want more draft picks in 2022. We all know how talented of a draft that is, although it is going to be very difficult to assess some of the prospects in that class given the Ontario Hockey League not having a season this year. But, I mean, let's face it, there's not a whole lot of confidence at all from this fan base with anything related to this franchise right now. It's been 10 years out of the playoffs. You know, you can have short-term wins like Kevin Adams did last offseason by signing Taylor Hall, by trading for Eric Staal, but until this franchise delivers on-ice results, until they put a respectable product out on the ice, this fan base is going to continue to be skeptical, and they should be, right? It's a franchise that they've made very minor mistakes have added up to being a massive 10-year problem, and it's not going to get fixed anytime soon based on them being on the precipice of another rebuild. Yes, you can sort of get some goodwill back from the fans if you get somebody like Zegras and you get the number three pick and grab William Eklund to add to your really, you know, promising group of young players. But still, again, until this team starts to win games, these fans aren't going to believe in anything this franchise is doing right now.
Not as far as roster composition, but the template would appear to be the Islanders, a team that was always viewed as having some talented players, but the environment was no good, never getting to the playoffs. The Islanders, they were a punchline in the league. We know how we view the Islanders suddenly after Lamoriello and Trotz come on board, and that's led a lot of people to saying what the Sabres need first and foremost is credibility at the top. Maybe not at ownership level, but right below that. Are they any closer? Does it feel like there's something pending as far as a president hire might go?
There's no interest when it comes to ownership hiring somebody in that role. Now, it's something they had with Pat LaFontaine for a few months back in 2015. Didn't work out. And Terry Pegula, Ken Pegula, they don't want it. So it's Kevin Adams. And they hire Jason Karmanos to take on some of the responsibilities that a president of hockey operations hire would. For example, building a staff, creating clear lines of communication, and hiring scouts, bringing in somebody like Sam Ventura, who is a very well-respected figure in the analytics community. It's that sort of thing. I'm with you, and I'm with the rest of the fans. They need somebody. They should have brought in Jim Rutherford, but they didn't call Jim Rutherford to express serious interest in adding him in a position such as that. They need to change the culture, and that's very difficult to do for somebody like Kevin Adams, who has very little experience in a role like this in hockey operations.
Is that one of the reasons, Lance, maybe why they kept with Don Granato, in the fact that it appeared, you know, with the lack of talent on that roster towards the end of the season, they were still competing hard. The players seemed to really like them. He seems to be one of those player coaches. Is that one of the reasons why they kept him on with that culture in that locker room?
He's a perfect fit for where this organization is at right now. He understands individual player development. He understands how to maximize practice time to not only help implement systems and to, you know, improve your power play and improve special teams, but helping guys individually grow their games. And his message resonated with the young players. You know, he got more out of players like Tage Thompson, like Casey Mittelstadt. Anders Bjork came here and showed more signs of the player the Bruins thought they were getting when they drafted him. So as much as, you know, say a segment of the fan base wanted that veteran coach like Bruce Boudreau, somebody who's won before, Don Granato, he's the guy that they want to bring in here to develop these young players and bring them along. With he has a lot of experience, you know, particularly with the USA National Team Development Program of building and helping these young guys improve their skill sets. So that's why he was the hire, and it's honestly one that I think made the most sense.
What are the chances in your mind that Rasmus Ristolainen is a Buffalo Sabre next season?
Very much higher than Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel. Listen, when it comes to Ristolainen, for whatever reason, no matter what the analytics tell you, no matter what the eye test tells you a lot of nights, the Sabres internally still value Rasmus Ristolainen more than their fan base, and I think a lot of people in the National Hockey League do. He has a skill set that they don't have in their organization right now. He's big. He's skilled. He has the intangibles that you want from a leadership standpoint, leads by example, works hard. And they're not going to part with him for a lesser package of assets than they're asking for. They're not desperate to move Rasmus Ristolainen. And so I think they are perfectly content having Ristolainen on the roster entering the season and then taking him to the trade deadline and moving him if it sees fit. Because he's not going to worsen your culture in the room. He's good with young players. As much as the guy wants to go and win elsewhere, he knows that he's going to have that opportunity to do so sooner rather than later, whether it's now or at the deadline. So if they don't get the ask, you know, in terms of another team that wants Ristolainen, I see them holding on to him.
There are a couple of very good news stories in terms of goaltenders for this organization late in the year. Michael Hauser, Dustin Tokarski, those were feel-good stories, but those would not appear to be the long-term answer in net. Linus Allmark has been a polarizing figure. Do the Sabres still believe that's the answer in goal, or do they need to go outside of the organization at this point for a new answer?
They are looking at every possible option because one of those is bringing back Allmark. They're interested in bringing back Allmark. They really love the strides that Allmark took under Mike Bales. But there is a growing sense that Linus Allmark is going to test the market because there are going to be teams that are interested in Linus Allmark. So when you're looking at goaltending, the Sabres are going to try to acquire one via trade, particularly before that the trade freeze begins Saturday, because Buffalo currently does not have a goalie to protect on the expansion list. So there's an opportunity there to get something done with a team that's desperate to move a goaltender. But they're prepared to add two guys this offseason to control the net in the NHL, whether it's a fringe backup via trade, free agent signing. Peter Mrazek is a guy that I think is worth looking out for in free agency because he worked so well with Mike Bales in Carolina. But the thing is, they're not going to give term to a goalie, and they're not going to overpay in free agency for a goalie like Chris Streeter. They've got Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, their top prospect, in Rochester, who should be ready within the next year or two. So it's going to be stopgap options unless they can get Allmark to sign with some term and have him control the net here in Buffalo.
Vegas has a goaltending issue, but I'm guessing that's not an option.
I think Vegas is definitely an option when it comes to Jack Eichel. I really do. That's a team that's going to have to get a center, or Sam Reinhart for that matter. They got some pieces. If they can sort of navigate the cap gymnastics to make something work, I think Reinhart's more realistic. It would not shock me at all because Vegas is a team that scouted Buffalo very, very heavily when Jack Eichel had his career year in 2019-20.
Well, I was going to say, Eichel is the right fit in Vegas, maybe not financially, but do they have the return there? Do they have the right pieces from a young asset standpoint, or would they need a third party to get involved to facilitate a deal?
I think that it's going to be very difficult, right? I mean, not only from a cap perspective, look at that team and where they're at from that standpoint, but also, you're right. I mean, they've unloaded assets in the past, Suzuki most notably, to try to grab that cup, but we know that Foley wants... He wants to push that team over the edge, so I think that they're willing to sort of move mountains a little bit to try to get a player of his caliber. We'll see if they can make it happen, but I'm skeptical that the trade market is as big as some people are saying. Again, I think it's Anaheim and Los Angeles. You know, as much as people are floating Minnesota out there as a possibility, the Wild also don't make sense for me.
And the Rangers, no, not happening, not doing it in state, can't go there because they would appear to have the assets.
I don't think they do. They don't have that young center the Sabres want. Maybe they have a goaltender, but let's face it. The Sabres want Jack Eichel as far away from Buffalo as possible. So he is out of their fan base's mind for, you know, most of the season or as much as humanly possible. They want him playing at 10 o'clock Eastern time, not 7 p.m. and having to come to Buffalo as many times as he would being a New York Ranger. So their preference is the Western Conference, and I just don't think a team in the East is going to have the assets to really entice them to make a move that would be a really massive PR hit if Jack Eichel goes to the New York Rangers and is playing extremely well for Chris Drury, who, of course, is a former Sabre and left town under, you know, less than ideal circumstances.
Getting Jack Eichel as far away from Buffalo as possible is something that the Sabres and Eichel would appear to have in common. Hey, Lance, thank you very much for doing this. Really appreciate your time. We're probably going to be calling again because this is one of the teams that is really going to shape this NHL offseason.
It's going to be a busy couple of weeks, guys. Good to talk to you. Take care.
Thanks, Lance.
Thank you. That is Lance Lysowski of the Buffalo News. And it still comes back to the thing he said about the president and there's no appetite. This franchise needs credibility. I like the Don Granato hire. I think he was a good story at the end of the season, got thrown a terrible set of circumstances, and made the most. He made some chicken salad, if you know the reference I'm getting at there. I like that. But, and there's no expectation on this team once they move Eichel and Reinhardt, and if they move anything else. But, man, they need some credibility, Karen.
Well, it strikes me as odd that the Pegulas would not want to give up that or want to bring that role in. Like, if you want to bring credibility to your organization. Like, Lance just said, 10 years without making the playoffs. And bottom of the barrel, right? Scott, like, they have been in the lottery those years. They have, obviously, they missed the playoffs. But they've been in the top 10, top 5, top pick those seasons. And you've got a fan base that has stuck with you through thick and thin. And you're going to have to tell them and sell them on some hard years going forward. You're going to have fans, paying fans, back in the arena this year. I mean, I think the only way that I think probably changes their mind, if it starts to go the direction of people aren't showing up, people aren't buying tickets. And I think that's the only thing that might change the Pegula's mind in trying to create a different culture, because they're going to understand the fans just aren't going to put up with this anymore.
Well, maybe they should hire you. You attracted a fan a little earlier. A lot of people wanted to weigh in. We will get to it next, right? Right here on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
We got one more intro song to go after this one. We'll work it in somehow. We'll work it in somehow, Karen.
Thanks, Greg. Yes, fly like a bird, like a little sparrow that came into my living room about an hour ago, Scott, that I made me scream on air. Lovely.
Don't thank Greg. Thank Devin, who texted into 650-650. You can hit us up there. You can hit us up at 960-960. Many of you have. And we got some short stories to share. Devin suggested Nelly Furtado's I'm Like a Bird for the intro music here. So if you have a suggestion for the final intro song of the program, which will come a little bit later on this hour, you can get that in to either of the text message inboxes. If you missed it, if you were late to the program, we know not everybody listens for the entirety of the 4 hours. It was just 1 hour ago. We started the 11 o'clock hour. We were starting to get into some baseball talk, or we were about to, and combine it with some hockey talk as well. Last night's All-Star Game, Legacy Players, all of this stuff. When suddenly, we were on air, and this happened. Bluebird Texture's pointing out, hey, this isn't unprecedented. There are other teams around the National Hockey League that do this. Are you okay?
Oh, my God, there's a bird in my house. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. All right.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
There's a bird on my television. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
All right. So I'm going to conduct this segment while you try to avoid a bird that has flown in your window. Karen is going to leave the microphone.
I like that in the distance you can tell I'm stepped away from the microphone. And then Greg was smart enough to pot it down. Yes. This is why I didn't want to scream or sing on radio, Scott, because I didn't want it to be out there for the end of time. And now we have me reacting to a bird flying into my condo on live television or live radio. Oh, my goodness.
Look, we're going to get back to talking sports. I promise we'll do that this hour. But something unique like this doesn't happen every single show. I feel like we need to open the floor up to any of our listeners, perhaps to the producer of this program, Jamie Dodd. Greg, if you have a story. I told a couple of stories last hour. I've been in the situation where I've had a bird in the home, and how do we get the bird out? And I had to be a little more proactive than you. Like, the bird wasn't leaving. I had a squirrel incident in college where there was, in my university, there was a bird in our lounge, and that was a more of a standoff, and the squirrel, of its own recognizance, excused itself at some point in time after we had a really long stare down, and I don't know which way this is going. Jamie, do you have anything to contribute? Have you had a bird in your home, a bird where you work, anything like that?
Not that I can remember off the top of my head. I certainly don't have anything that played out in as entertaining a manner as Karen's did. I have to say, I'm sorry, Karen, but I quite enjoyed it.
Hey, listening back to it, I laughed. In the moment, though, you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, it's close to the patio door. Maybe they'll fly out. No, I can't just sit here and go on with the radio show and have it fly around, because if it gets further into my condo, like, what am I going to do then? And I don't want it also to fly into the window and then knock itself out like birds are prone to do. So I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I coax it in the moment to quickly go to the patio door? It only lasted about, what, 1 minute maybe? I think it wasn't a very long time. The bird flew out pretty quickly. But in the moment, I panicked and I didn't know what to do.
Hey, look, I know a lot of our listeners have had run-ins with animals. I'm not talking about ones that are supposed to scare you. Like, you are out in the wilderness and you encounter a bear, or you come across some sort of wildcat in, you know, I was going to say cougar, but then we're going to get a whole different derivative of text coming in. You know that'll be the case. But you're in the wild, you're in the wilderness, you're in that environment. We're talking about something that is not supposed to be threatening, like a bird, like a squirrel. Have you had an encounter like that? A lot of our listeners have texted in. Some of them said bats. How about this one? I had a situation where I was alone at home. I heard a bang upstairs on the main floor. I don't hear the dog barking or anything. So when I go into the living room, I see the dog look at the ceiling. A squirrel fell through our chimney. I had to run around the house chasing the squirrel out of the house as it was running through the kitchen and bedroom. Eventually, it got out. That reminds me of Christmas Vacation when the squirrel gets in and the dog is chasing the squirrel, brings down the whole thing. Eventually, the house goes up in flames when the uncle has the cigar. But, yeah, that reminds me of that incident with chasing a squirrel around the home.
I'm glad this didn't happen at the time. A bird flew in my house and got the kids panicking, then started pooping everywhere until I could throw a blanket on it and pick it up and get it outside. I'm very happy I didn't have to deal with that, Scott, or else you probably would have had to do the majority of the show by yourself. Jer from Coquitlam says, I once had a bird flying to my room. At the time, I had nerve damage in my neck, so I had to shoo the bird out with a neck brace. With a neck brace on while being extremely immobile, not great. The visual of that is probably a little bit more entertaining than the visual of me trying to get it out with a towel. It's incredible the amount of people that have had run-ins with birds and animals in their house, Scott.
I wish I was recording it at the time, because I will tell you, it was rather humorous. None of our listening audience saw you like I saw you, because I've got FaceTime going while we're doing this program today as we're in our two separate homes. It was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. Like, the audio was pretty good that Greg played, but the visual, if I could have put that out there for the world to see, I would certainly have put that out there.
Like, what did my face look at? Was it pure shock, terror, horror, amusement? Any of all of those mixed together?
Yeah, well, and this maybe goes in conjunction with the video we are going to release for the masses once you do the beer mile. You know when a soccer player misses what he feels or she feels is a quality opportunity and the two hands go up to the face?
Yeah.
Like, it was that combined with the eyes that have gotten about twice as large as they normally are because you're a little bit freaked out. It was those two things coming together. That was the best visual that I saw during the course of that.
Good, good. I'm glad that that is not out there for the world to see. Yes, we will eventually do the beer mile, and that will be out there for the world to see. Woke up one morning to a pair of pigeons who nested the night on my condo's mantle. That would not be ideal. This was at least a little sparrow. It wasn't a crow, so I didn't have to deal with those vicious animals. Like, this is a nice little bird, and I'm sure I would have dealt with it if it had come at me. No, probably would have flung the towel at it, and hopefully it would have landed on it. I could have figured that out. But pigeons are messy, and they leave a ton of disaster in their wake no matter where they go. A whole night on your mantle, on your fireplace, in your house, that would not be ideal to wake up to.
John sends this one in. Used to be in Vancouver, trained in Vancouver, says John. While I was studying at the table here, a big crash on the other side of the house by our side door. My classmate, who's a roommate, coming home after his 12-hour shift at St. Paul's, which is a hospital in downtown Vancouver. Then I hear this voice from the other side of the house and fence yelling at me to open the door. In runs my roommate, all out of breath, looking quite a bit frazzled. So he was coming down our narrow side walk, which is dead into the backyard. And being later and dark, he startled a raccoon in the trash bins who, feeling cornered, then startled him. I'm just glad it all ended well for you, Karen, says John.
Good. Yes, it did end well. The bird did leave on its own volition. Adam, the former Bath guy, I once had a bird fly into my work truck while I was driving down the highway. Now, that's not ideal because that's dangerous, right? Like, if I had panicked the way that I had panicked right here, who knows what could have happened. Adam, the former Bath guy, I'm glad to know that since you're texting us, everything worked well, but I could only imagine the shock that you would get if you're on the highway and then a bird flies right in.
Had a starling in my attic. Left the hatch open so it would make its way out of the house and I could catch it. So we're sitting watching TV. The bird comes flying out, nails the window right between my wife and I, almost hit me in the face, says Spencer. Got this one from Q, who says, my wife went into the spare room to clean up some of the kids' toys. She went to kick a toy out of the way. Turned out it was a real lizard that the cat brought in. Scared the living crap out of her. You're out on lizards? Not one? Nothing to do with them?
reptiles, amphibians, whatever you want to do, slimy things, lizards, no, I'm out in that. I would have really freaked out if I saw a lizard crawl into my condo right now. That one definitely probably would have had the pass out effect. Scott, there's a couple of raccoons. Thankfully, I've never had a raccoon encounter. I mean, I have raccoon encounters. I used to live in downtown Vancouver. They're very prevalent at night. I was close to, many people know what Stanley Park is, the big park in the area. A lot of wildlife live there. And when I used to work on the morning show at 4 o'clock in the morning, you go out and raccoons are doing what they're doing at night, right, Scott? They're nocturnal animals. They're trying to find food, do whatever they can. Don't go by a raccoon if it has its babies with them. Because guess what? The one thing that raccoon will do, like any animal and parental instincts, is protect its babies. Go nowhere near a raccoon when it has its babies.
Now, you mentioned Stanley Park. There was a coyote attack there with a toddler.
I know.
That's something that's been in the news over the last 24 hours. Jesse from Calgary. My dad had an incident years ago in Sylvan Lake. A seagull flew into the side window of his car while he was driving down Main Street. Not great. Not great. That reminds me of seagulls. Do you remember Indiana Jones' Last Crusade? And
yep,
Sean Connery
windows.
Goes down the beach and gets the seagulls to
fly
up.
Oh, that part of it,
and,
yes.
Yeah. Downs the
crashes
plane.
Crashes the airplane
saves,
of the,
saves the day.
Germans.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, saves the day. I visited my grandpa who lives in Montreal, says this texter, I was staying upstairs in the bedroom. All of a sudden, a bat started swirling around my head. I tried to hit it. I missed. So I slept in the bathroom. The next morning, I went searching for it. Looked behind all of his curtains. We found a total of 24 bats living in this house. They were getting in through the fireplace, and the evidence of poop suggested they had been there for months.
24 bats. What would your reaction be, Scott, for that? I'd be like, I'm leaving and never coming back.
You hope they're sleeping, and you quietly escort yourself out of the room, close the door, and then you call somebody who is better equipped to deal with it. You're talking about one bat. You're talking about one bird. You're talking about one squirrel. Okay, you feel like that's a task you can take on your own. You're talking about 24 bats, and bats generally pretty harmless. They just frighten us a little bit. They're fast, and they're generally not going to hit you, but it's not great to have a whole bunch of them around. I don't need the scene from Batman when he's fallen down the well and the bats are down. I don't need that happening to me. So if that actually transpired, Karen, I think I'm backing out of the room, closing the door, getting on the phone to somebody who's a little better equipped to deal with it.
From Donkey the Roofer, hey, Karen, be thankful it wasn't a cobra chicken. What the heck is a cobra chicken? It sounds vicious.
I don't know.
Yes, I'm very happy it was a sparrow and not a cobra chicken. What the donkey text back in? I want to know what a cobra chicken is. Maybe I'll Google it to see what it is. But go ahead, Scott.
This one comes in to 960. I was cleaning my window screen when I was 16. I lived in a small town near Red Deer, Alberta. This squirrel ran around, jumped through my open window. My mom, my grandma, and me were all trying to figure out what to do. So my grandma grabbed a blanket, jumped on the squirrel, and it ended up biting her. Which she then smashed it into my cabinet and knocked it out. My grandma was 83 at the time, says this texter. How intense is that?
That is amazing. That's a story that you tell with pride. Grandma, 83-year-olds, jumping on the squirrel, ends up biting her, and then you know what she does? She goes, screw this. She knocks it against the cabinet and knocks it out. Like, way to go, Grandma. That's a good one. This one says, had a bear come through the kitchen window and steal my supper off the counter. Not as serious as Karen's encounter, but similar. No. Bear coming into your house and stealing your food is a much serious encounter than having a bird just come and land on my television.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Canadian geese were called cobra chickens. I didn't know that was some sort of colloquial term for Canadian geese. But yeah, they can be a little more vicious. You don't want to go near a goose that is pissed off.
No, you don't. You get the hissing sound. And again, if there's babies around, Scott, you get the wings up. Like, you had a dog at one point in time. I had a dog at one point in time. You walk a dog by geese and a family of goslings at the time, and that mama goose turns into a nightmare.
Is this better or worse? We just had Crypto Cow text in and say, ground floor condo, raccoons, squirrels, all sorts of birds on the patio all day, all night. See them on the security camera. So that's on the patio. Okay, whatever. That's outside your home. That's kind of the same domain that these creatures live in. But if you have the indoor security camera and then you see the next day that things have been crawling around while you're asleep and nothing actually happened to you, how do you feel about that afterwards? When you go, oh, these animals came in, did what they needed to do and left. Is it no harm, no foul, or is it we need to beef up security around here?
I think it's, we need to close all the windows and doors at night when we sleep, because, yeah, I don't think that I'd want to wake up in the morning and see what kind of animals were in my house. Thank you for all the people that are texting in Cobra Chicken. I had no idea, Scott had no idea that it was a Canada goose. It makes sense, though, with how vicious and, you know what, people think that Canada geese are cute at some points of times. I just find them annoying and wish they were never around. They make a ton of mess everywhere they go. They, you know what, in fairness, protect their babies as they should. But they are just, sorry, I have to say, useless animals.
Seems like the majority of the stories coming in either have had birds fly into their home, squirrels are involved here, bats seem to be a pretty common one as well. Anders, who listens to us south of the border in Issaquah, says, had a bat fly into my house on Mercer Island well after midnight, came in, made its way into the bedroom next to mine. Not a lot of people super comfortable with bats. If you have any more stories, get them in. A little fun today as a bird flew into our broadcast, at least half of our broadcast. It was in Karen's home earlier this show. A little bit of news. Do we call this news coming out of the National Hockey League? Please put me in the camp of I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to officiating and enforcement. And we have examples from the past. Darren Dreger reporting today that there are no new recommendations from Tuesday's competition committee, but there were discussions over concerns with a lack of consistency between regular season and playoffs with cross-checking and other penalties. Enforce the rule book is the takeaway. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. We go through this exercise every year. We saw it with hooking coming out of the lockout, hooking and holding. Okay, they're going to come down, they're going to cut down on that. And boy, we had to get our minds wrapped around what the new NHL was going to look like at that point in time. We saw this with slashing on the wrist a few years ago, and they enforced that substantially in the preseason. It's a call we see now, not as frequently, but it still happens. Are they actually going to do something here? They say this all the time.
They do say it all the time, Scott. And they do say that it's the most difficult sport come playoffs to try and officiate, but we have the best officials in the world. Gary Bettman reiterated that with Ron McLean on the broadcast. He reiterated that before his year or before his press conference ahead of game one of the Stanley Cup final. Here's the thing. Okay, so call the rule book. Like, are we going to see it early on where they call the rule book over call the rule book? Like you said, with the hooking and with the specifically the slashing, because when that happened a couple of years ago in the preseason, it was like a whistle every 2 minutes. And it was like, holy cow, if this is the way it's going to be in the regular season, like go back to the other way, because I don't want to have whistles every 2 seconds. But it did kind of peter itself out as the season went on, at least after the first few games of the regular season. To me, this is a non-story because, yeah, they can say call the rule book, but come the playoffs, there's going to be a change in standard. It's just the case there is. I just wish they would admit it. Like, they're not going to, but it's the way it is. And so for me, it's like, okay, well, they can say that, but it's probably not going to happen.
There has long been a hypocrisy associated with cross-checking, and we brought this up during the playoffs because that seemed to be the one that was in the most focus. Well, why aren't they calling that cross-check? That looks like an obvious cross-check. Why aren't they doing it? And then we got a couple that were called, and Kucherov's by Scott Mayfield is the one that pops top of mind. It wasn't called. Kucherov got hurt. Certainly didn't prevent here the Lightning from winning the Cup. However, what constitutes a cross-check as opposed to just a physical play? The hypocrisy that has long been there is if a defensive player does it in the defensive zone, we're going to let the defensive player get away with it for the most part when he's trying to clear the front of the net. But if an offensive player goes to that area and uses it to push off and create space and thus a scoring opportunity, we're going to call it on the offensive player. It's a really delicate rule to deal with. It's tough. I said this to you at the time. Do they go down the road like pass interference in football from an offensive point of view? Look, if we see a full arm extended, we're going to call you, but you can kind of do the chicken wing push off thing in there. Do they go that way with cross checking? Look, if you get full extension on that, I'm going to have to call it, but I'll deal with a little bit of a push off somewhere where you don't extend your arms fully. I don't know what the answer is. I don't even know if that's a good solution. I'm just trying to figure out how they go about enforcing this more consistently.
I mean, I think when it comes to just specifically the playoffs, like they do, I mean, trying to think back to the regular season, if I can see some egregious calls that weren't called, were called. I can't really have any come to mind in the moment. But Scott, I think it's just about if you're consistently going to call it one way, do it that way. And if you're consistently going to call it the other way, do it that way. And I know that seems very obscure in how I'm going to explain it, but if you set the tone early for what the calls are going to be, and if you're going to call a cross check early, whether it's a guy extends his arm, whether he just puts the chicken elbows out and doesn't go all the way, if that's what you're going to call, just call it early and then consistently call it throughout the game. That's all we're asking for at this point. It's just don't let it go down the road that we saw in, say, the Montreal and the Vegas series where we're thinking it's just getting too out of control. Like, you just have to start with it early and then go from there, because you're not going to call the rule book when it comes to the playoffs in terms of what the letter of the law is.
I kind of wanted to make the transition to sports and stay on that, but we have so many texts coming in about incidents with animals that you shouldn't fear or bizarre encounters with animals that you've had in your lifetime. How about this? Co-workers had a bird fly in the side window at 100 kilometers an hour. It exploded on the rear window right beside his head. That's like the Randy Johnson seagull incident. Or yeah, pigeon incident. Pardon me. It was a pigeon incident.
Could Dave you imagine
Winfield
the mess,
was the seagull.
Though?
Oh.
And how traumatized you would be from having a seagull or a bird explode beside you and then have to have it probably explode all over you as well. Yeah, no, I don't want to think I ever want to experience that. Sitting on my front porch and a pigeon landed in front of us, walked towards us, walked past us and into the front door, walked into the dining room, found some bread in the kitchen and then lost interest and walked back out the door. It was abandoned. It was banded, so had been around people, but the damnedest thing to see, Kevin, and that's 960. Yeah, can you imagine just sitting there? This pigeon comes up to you, Scott, walks nonchalantly by you. I mean, my first instinct was to probably stop it, then to going into my house, but just nonchalantly goes in the kitchen, gets some food, then, I'm done, walks right back out.
I understand what Kevin's getting at, though. Sometimes there's just this infatuation of what's going to happen here. I kind of want to see how this is playing out, and obviously that's the way it went for Kevin at the time. Well, where's the pigeon going? Because it's walking very confidently, very calmly at the time. Maybe the pigeon kind of gave the head nod, like, what's up? And just walked in, grabbed some bread. I'm done here. I got what I came for. You guys go on about your business. Have a great night. I just wanted a little bit of bread. I know what he's talking about here. Jeff from the Hand Hill says, living in the country, had a few wild birds make it into the house. But my favorite was one time where my wife thought she was home alone, stepped out of the shower, but with nothing but a smile, only to be greeted by a turkey that had wandered into the house when the door accidentally got left open. It was our pet, Frank the Tank. But needless to say, it still gave my wife a startle. It's pretty good.
Barbecuing on my balcony downtown Calgary, ran out of propane, went to change my propane tank and found a nest with three pigeon eggs and an angry mama bird. Official advice was to throw the nest in the trash. Pigeons will forget it and move on. False. Had four pigeons on the crest of the roof opposite my balcony watching me for days. They don't forget. They did not move on. Those are usually crows. Like, crows do not forget. They are vicious animals that will come back after you. Have you ever been dive bombed by one? I know we talked about this. I have been. It is one of the scariest things, and they don't stop.
Not as badly as you're describing. Recently, in fact, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had one fly in the general area I was walking. It wasn't the full-on I'm coming after your head that you are describing and other people have talked about with dive bombing. So I have an inkling of what it is, but it's never actually happened to me in the way you're describing right now. But people get pretty terrified. And the thing about, as you say, with crows, they remember faces. Like, they're super smart birds. Super smart. This one comes in. I was having lunch with my girlfriend's dad at Subway while my girlfriend was shopping with her mom. Shameless plug there. We chose to eat at one of the tables they had outside. Out of nowhere, a seagull crashed onto our table, knocked it over, flopped around on the ground for a few seconds, and then took off. This one from Devin. He talked about raccoons. Here we go. Was living in the SFU townhouses with a couple of buddies. They left the sliding door to the house on the top floor. I'm studying at my desk. See a raccoon peek around the corner on the second floor. I promptly yell, WTF, with confusion. My friend was downstairs with his girlfriend, so I go ask him if he left the door open. He pieces it together as he answers. We all go out, chase him out of the house. Trash was littered everywhere across the bedroom. That's from Devin. So the humans won in this situation. The humans won.
I'm not a big... the raccoons scare me because they have claws, and I've actually had my dog attacked by raccoons because, again, babies were around, and dog's off leash, just running around in the dark. Raccoon goes after it because it wants to protect its babies, so I'm not a big fan of them. I don't get the people that see them in the daylight and want to feed them. First of all, if you see raccoons in the daylight, you have a problem. Because they're nocturnal animals, they should not be around in the daylight. They're searching for food. Second of all, don't feed raccoons.
Well, I get why. You understand why. Raccoons on the surface. Pretty cute. Pretty cute. When you're not factoring in the whole trash panda thing, raccoons are pretty cute to look at. But it becomes a problem. And listen, I lived at UBC during my university. There were raccoons out there on that campus. And I watched other students. They would see them in those dusk hours at night. Oh, yeah, let's go give the raccoons some food. Hey, it's cute. Go give the raccoons some food. Well, of course, that keeps the raccoons coming back. Where it turns ugly is where people wander back from the bar, and it is good times for the raccoons.
Yes.
Hey, it's the middle of the night. You're coming from the back from the bar. It's 1 in the morning, and drunk people, as you may know, Karen, a little more liberal than sober people. And those drunk people decide to go have an encounter with the raccoon. Oh, I'm going to go pet the raccoon. I'm going to go feed the raccoon. The raccoon thinks you're infringing on the territory. Some of those incidents turned bad. Never happened to me, but I knew enough stories back in the day.
Okay, I'm going to fit one more because I know we're up against the break. We used to have one or two bats in our house growing up in the summer out by Sylvan Lake, so we decided to fix up our chimney cover. First night, we had 12 bats come into the house, resulted in my mom and I having a few volleys with the badminton rackets. Yeah, I can picture that actually right now, visualize it. Ended up getting close to 40 over the course of the week before we got them all taken outside. And a couple of years ago, a muskrat got into the house through the dryer vent. The cat wanted nothing to do with it, so that was also pretty fun. Moral of the story, Sylvan Lake, you're kind of in like the, you know, living in nature out there, you know, bats, muskrats. But if the cat wants nothing to do with it, you know you've got an issue.
Muskrats, weasels, yeah, I'm out. Ferrets. Not terribly scared of them, but it does remind me of the scene in The Big Lebowski where they throw the ferret into the tub with the dude, and that gets a little awkward. We got one final segment coming your way. Lots of great listener contributions today. We'll work a few more in, and we'll get you some notes and quotes next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Fly like an eagle, Karen. Fly like an eagle.
Or a sparrow. A little tiny sparrow coming into your living room. Here's an eagle story. 960-960-650-650. Of course, we've been talking about, Scott, the fact that about 90 minutes ago, we had an intruder on our show. And it was a little sparrow that flew into my living room. And if you haven't heard it, I'm sure it'll be played over the course of our show for years to come, hopefully, Scott. The fact that I reacted, as probably anyone would react, startled, surprised. What do I do to get the sparrow out of my house? But I was 12 years old. My grandparents lived on the coast just outside Powell River. I was putting a salmon head on a big rock on the beach, and a bald eagle flew down and almost took off my head. I was white as a ghost. Have you ever had the bald eagles like swirling above you and you're just like, what is right below me at the moment? I had it with, because again, I'll go back to the dog I previously had. She's 12 pounds and she was white. And my fear was that these eagles, and there was two of them that were swirling above us, was like, they think she's food. So I picked her up and I ran away.
Yep. Get out of there with that opportunity. I have never had the eagle swirling above me thinking that something in and around me was going to be a problem. I have had the great fortune of going fishing in Haida Gwaii, and so that's one of the things that you will see out there, that a little bit of bait will be thrown out into the water, and you'll see the eagle swoop down and grab it right off of the ocean near your boat. It's super cool. Like, it's awesome to watch. It's just spectacular, and throw a little bit of fish over for the eagle to get. That's great. I have seen the eagle with a seagull in its talons being chased by
really?
A pack of seagulls. Yeah. And so the eagle got a seagull and is trying to get away. That's going to be dinner. And all the seagull's friends say nope. And the eagle can't fly fast enough because it's carrying the weight at that point. And so at some point, just drop the seagull, and it just dropped like a rock. Not a great day for the seagull either way, but the pack of seagulls chased that eagle off. Someone else came in with a seagull story. Listen to this one. A few years ago, my best friend and I were working in Falls Creek, finalizing an irrigation system for a greenscape on the roof of an 18th floor of some apartment buildings. As we climbed onto the roof with no safety railings left, but we did have fall protection on, this texter points out, we turned on the sprinklers. We started to adjust to make sure everything was working. Much to our surprise, several seagulls started screaming their battle cries and continuously dive bombing us. We took shelter under some ducting, only to realize there was a nest right above the roof hatch. This went on for 10 minutes as we desperately tried to shoo them away with our shovels until a sky crane from the construction site next door to us saw us swung the boom of the crane over our building to finally scare the relentless seagulls away. To this day, when a seagull caws, I cringe, says this texter.
No kidding. Seagulls are just, I mean, they're not fun animals. They leave a mess everywhere. It's most birds do, right? You've got geese, you've got seagulls, and then to have a bunch of them coming at you, no thank you, don't want to see this. Okay, so born and raised in East Van, moved to Maple Ridge last year. One night, our dog was going crazy, looked out the window into our backyard. There was a mama bear with two cubs eating honey bell my wife had hung up for the birds. After the initial shock, we sat on the balcony and watched the show. They finished their snack and left kind of cool. We don't leave things out anymore. It's kind of cool in the moment until the bears start coming back, Scott, looking for food. Like, I understand it's cool in the moment, it's a cool story to have, but there's also a concern when bears start coming into people's houses and backyards and garbages, because that means there's a bigger issue in nature.
When there are cubs involved, you don't want anything to do with it. No. You really don't. I told you I'm up at my mom's this week, so she happens to live up at Shuswap Lake, and I'll bring my bike up with me and go on the occasional bike ride when I'm up here. Last year, for the first time out on this route that I've done before, I came across a cub running across the road, maybe not a cub, just a little bit older than that, and the first thing you think is someone else coming? Because I don't want to be around the young bear. Mm-hmm. Mama bear, papa bear, that's bad enough. Like, you're already at a disadvantage, but generally, they don't want anything to do with you. They're going to move on. If you've grown up anywhere in the interior, if you've grown up in anything close to rural in Western Canada, you've probably had some idea of how to deal with a bear encounter should you come across one. But when there's cubs involved, don't want any part of it. I'm out of here. I'll get out of here the best way I can, but I don't want to stick around too long.
Jeff from the Hand Hills, he says, living in the country, we had a few wild birds make their way into us. Did you read this one already? I'm sorry.
I got to that one yet, last segment. No, there have been so many. I understand why. I understand why you're going there. We'll get a couple more of these in before the end of the program. We had a bird drop in on the program today halfway through the show and has spurred on just a bevy of texts. So we thank our listeners. I've had some comic relief out of listening to this. I've put myself in some of your shoes, and it's been frightening to think of myself in some of your situations. We will get a couple more in before the end of the program. Greg, in fact, would like to share an eagle story. Greg, you have an eagle story you would like to put on the air.
Well, it's not a story per se, but when Karen says she is not used to seeing the eagles floating above her, it just got me thinking. I live in South Delta. There's a ton of bald eagles down that way. I don't know if you guys have been out that way, but you're guaranteed to see a bunch of them if you go to South Delta. And there was actually a recent story in the news that the people who take care of those eagles and look after their well-beings went up into the nests, I guess, to do some tagging or to whatever. And they came out with 4 or 5 or 6 dog and cat collars in those nests.
Oh, so be very careful
if you do see those eagles flying around above your head.
Yeah, see, this is why I picked the dog up and I ran, because I was like, there's no way, like, I'm going to be able to get this dog back if an eagle decides to it's dinner for the next couple of days. No, thank you.
Yeah, not great if it's your pet. It is the circle of life, but it's not great if it happens to be your family pet. Let's get to notes and quotes.
Who's in the top six?
Getting pucks out, getting pucks deep.
Who's in the crease?
Really none of your business.
And who's in the press box? It's time for notes and quotes.
We do have a game to talk about tonight. It's not the only game on the schedule. The WNBA All-Star Game goes this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Sportsnet will be televising that. NBA Finals goes again. I think there's going to be some eyes, by the way, on the WNBA game. Their ratings are up over the course of the past year, and this is not quite a standalone event because we've got Game 4 of the NBA Finals, but I'll bet you those numbers come back looking not too bad.
But how cool is this? They're using it basically as a tune-up for the women's U.S. basketball team. So it's the U.S. national basketball team against the WNBA All-Stars. I'm really interested to tune in. We know how dominant the U.S. women's basketball team has been over the years. Obviously, the number one seed going in. But the talent level in the WNBA is off the charts right now. So to see other players go against them, I'm pretty looking forward to that. Of course, our Canadian women's basketball team heading to Tokyo, Scott, number 4 in the world. Obviously, medal hopes to come home with some sort of medal. I don't know if it's gold, silver, or bronze, but either way, a medal hope for our Canadian team. But I'm really intrigued to see this just because the competition level will be massive.
Well, they want to make sure what happened to the men's team doesn't happen to them. A couple of losses in the preseason schedule. They got things back on track yesterday, blew out Argentina. But listen, this is the level at with the U.S. national team exists when it comes to men's basketball. Like, you're not supposed to win. You're supposed to win every game handily. You're supposed to bring home a gold medal. Anything less unacceptable. And with a couple of preseason losses under Greg Popovich, people were starting to wring their hands a little bit.
We know it's not their complete A team because some people had to turn down going there, but did I read this correctly, Scott? Like, when they played Nigeria previous, was it in the Olympics or some World Cup competition, they beat them by 78 points and then they lost to Nigeria in qualifying. I know it was the first one, and good on Nigeria for coming and showing up, but it was almost like there was a call for a summit at that point, right, by U.S. basketball south of the border. It's like, okay, we need to have a summit to figure out what's going on because this cannot be happening, and what's going to happen in the Olympics if this goes on moving forward?
Well, it's the long-time effect of the Dream Team, and it's not all just the Dream Team, but putting the Dream Team on that stage early in the 90s, it helped raise the level of basketball, which was already increasing around the planet, but putting that exposure there, hey, all of a sudden you've got a team you want to go after. Hey, imagine if we could upset the U.S. basketball team, which we know has happened, and they don't come back with a gold medal every single time. But that's the standard. The rest of the world has been catching up. It's part of the frustration of our nation because we have so many NBA players, and we have what appears to be such a talented roster, and yet our men's team can't qualify for the Olympics as of yet. Feels like a when, not an if. I just want that when to get here a little sooner. We're going to get ourselves an NBA game tonight as well. Game 4. Is this a missed opportunity or just part of the scheduling quirk? There was the All-Star game. There was the Home Run Derby. Those are standalone affairs. Only one NBA game in basically a week.
So they played Sunday, Game 3, which saw the Bucks, you know, win at home, win pretty handily. Giannis, 41 points, pretty impressive game. And then, yes, 2 days off they play today. Then 2 days off they play on Saturday. I think it comes with, they didn't want to go up against the All-Star game yesterday. I completely understand that. ESPN didn't want to do that. Fine. I guess when they look at ratings, they get better ratings Saturday night than they do Friday night. Scott, south of the border, because you know this is all about television ratings. Like, it has to do with either complications on the schedule or just television. So I think going to Game 5, this, I think, though, doesn't this strike you as better for the Bucks? And I say this because so far this series has gone as planned. And it's Game 1 and Game 2. Game 1, though, we weren't sure if Giannis was going to play. Injured knee, coming back, hyperextension. Looked fine, but you could probably tell he was still feeling his way out. Game 2, he's got 41 points. Game 3, he's got 41 points. He's got two more days rest to get that knee back to whatever health. Like, doesn't this, to me, just strike you as a little bit more for the Bucks versus the Suns?
I see why you're making the case, but no, it doesn't. I think it's equal footing here. Giannis has been great in this series despite the injury passed round. I'm not sure that he's going to increase his production just because he has an extra day of rest. In fact, I could make a case the opposite way, that it gives Monty Williams and the Suns a little extra time to figure out what they want to do defensively, an opportunity to work through that a little bit. I think there's an equal case to be made. I'd like to see this go 2-2. I want this to be a longer series. I want us to have more great numbers to talk about. It's not a series that is generating a great amount of television interest, but I hope we get some drama out of it. If they get to a Game 7, it would certainly provide that.
Absolutely. No baseball on tonight. One game tomorrow. Of course, Yankees, Red Sox, Scott, and then we all get back from the All-Star break on Friday. But there is something happening tomorrow, and for people that may forget or just aren't paying attention, like, it's the fourth major and 50 days. I mean, every 50 day we're having a major right now. Like, it's crazy around how this is happening. It's the Open Championship. We didn't have it last year. So the defending championship for 2 years has been Shane Lowry. He won it in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush a couple of years ago. He had to hand his claret jug back in. But yes, Royal St. George's, they're going to tee off early in London tomorrow.
Part of the story with this, the number of withdrawals that there have been, we'll get to those in a second. But here is Ian Baker Finch. Who does this course favor at this year's Open?
I think someone that is driving the ball well. I've always felt like the Royal St. George's favored the long hitter, the guy that was driving it great. And I think Greg Norman personified that with his victory in 1993. He just drove the ball beautifully. He was the best driver in the world for a decade. So I look to guys like Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka, who just seem to be able to drive the ball day in, day out so well in major championships. And that the other side of that is someone that, you know, Bryson DeChambeau, who drives the ball great, but does he have the ability to flight it down and keep it in the fairway? So that length that Bryson has is a huge advantage at some places, but if the wind blows at 20 mile an hour for two or three of the days, I don't think that is an advantage the way he plays it. I think he might have to go down and flight his irons down to keep it in play. And I also like that the guys that have a lot of patience, because it's a very difficult course, lots of crazy bounces, lots of strange dog legs and blind holes. So someone like a Xander Schauffele, who I think is just so patient and just, you know, I think he's due. So they'd be the guys I'd be looking for. And, of course, John Rahm, who's in just fantastic mental shape at the moment.
And John Rahm, obviously the betting favorite going in, defending U.S. Open Championship. He finished seventh in Scotland last week, obvious. My question is about Rory McIlroy, Scott. He hasn't won a major in 7 years. We've seen him, he won an event on the PGA Tour this season already, but has he figured out something in his game to win, of course, the major that it is his major? And we saw the pressure he had at Royal Portrush a couple of years ago. Remember, he had that terrible first round, and he came back in the second round and almost made the cut, but the pressure was on Rory to win at home in Northern Ireland. So my question is for this tournament is to see what kind of consistency can we see from Rory McIlroy.
He will be in the field. There's a bunch of others that aren't going to be there. 12 different players have withdrawn from this tournament, including Hideki Matsuyama, Matthew Wolff, Bubba Watson, Zach Johnson, among the household names who have said thanks, but no thanks. Zach Johnson testing positive for COVID, so not much he could do, but there are a bunch of names that aren't going to be involved. The Open's always fun. It's always fun, weird and wacky conditions. You don't know what's going to be like in the morning compared to the afternoon. It's such a different style of golf. I enjoy watching it despite the bizarre hours when we're watching it.
Yeah, because I think if we're to go to bed at 11 o'clock tonight Pacific time and 12 o'clock, say, Mountain time, that's when they're teeing off over there in England. So you could probably, if you were a night owl, you could watch a couple of rounds before you wake up in the morning. This tweet, I love, and it just speaks to what you were saying about the weather, Scott. Jason Sobel covers the PGA Tour. He says, only event of the year where the pre-tournament weather narrative is essentially, oh, it won't be much of anything, and the forecast is only calling for consistent 25-plus miles per hour winds through each round. The weather is always phenomenal. First of all, though, like, I'd love to go to Scotland. I'd love to go to England. I'd love to go to Ireland, but doesn't watching this tournament in June, July, whatever the case is, make you think, like, when am I going to go over there? Because the weather is always crap.
Yep. It is not exactly part of the postcard when you head overseas. Not exactly part of the postcard. Sorry, Karen, I was a little distracted. We got some breaking news coming in here.
Oh.
Not everybody follows the MLS. But this is significant for the Toronto Blue Jays, potentially. This is significant for other teams that would like to host, teams like the Vancouver Canadiens, for example. Hmm. So, CF Montreal and the MLS have announced the club is going to be able to host FC Cincinnati in Montreal this Saturday. Maximum of 5,000 spectators allowed. But there's a team that's going to cross the border in FC Cincinnati into Canada, play a match, and that's going to be okay. Toronto FC, CF Montreal, those are two teams saying, can we start hosting some games? We've been on the road. We want to do it in our country. So they're going to have that opportunity in Montreal. There's a lot of conversation out there right now about whether the Blue Jays could be hosting games by the end of this month. They start a homestand on July 30th. If they're not able to do it by then, they're looking at August 20th, I believe, as to the next part of their schedule where it would seemingly make sense to do so. But this would appear to be a step in that direction, Karen.
So it's interesting. Just, is this a federal decision or a provincial decision? And I ask that because 680 News out of Toronto, which is a Rogers station, one of our sister stations, said a source, a decision is not expected this week on the proposals from the Blue Jays and Toronto FC to resume home games with American teams crossing the border. Now, the Blue Jays are among the 23 teams above the 85% threshold of vaccination players, coaches, and medical training staff. So the Montreal, Quebec government and the federal government is going to okay it, but obviously there's something with the Ontario government that's the holdup. Like, I thought it was federal all along.
We will see. And maybe that story develops, and maybe this leads to that happening. And you're right. We don't have a definitive answer on any events in Ontario as of yet. We saw what happened with the Montreal Canadiens being allowed to host spectators. That wasn't involving a team outside the NHL, and that NHL approval had been granted a long time ago. It is treated a little differently in our country than this sport. This is MLS. It's not as big a deal, but this might pave the way for something to happen with FC or Toronto FC and the Blue Jays a little bit later on this month. I can't believe the volume of people who have had animal encounters. I feel like we should get a couple more of these coming in or get them in before the end of the show because we've had so many coming in. Justin in Maple Ridge, as a kid, I was sleeping in the bottom bunk of my bunk bed, felt something crawl up my leg. I'm in a sleepy state. I assume that my hamster got out of its cage and was at the foot of my bed. It's made its way up to my chest. At this point, I reached to turn on the lamp. It's 6 inches from my face. A bat. After we locked eyes for what felt like an eternity, I tried to take off, and it tried to take off flying, but as it was on the bottom bunk, it couldn't make a clean escape, flapping around, hitting me in the face multiple times before it got away. That is Justin in Maple Ridge.
Is it one of the worst feelings, Scott, feeling something like crawling on you and like a spider or a snake or whatever? Like, could you imagine sleeping and then all of a sudden feeling something crawling on your leg? I'd be like, nope, I'm out. And I say that a lot because I am just not good with any sort of critter. I'll deal with spiders. I'll deal with wasps. I worked at a ranch outside of San Diego. There were lots of different animals that I had to deal with there. Those are fine. But if you give me anything slippery or slimy or a bird flying around in my condo as I'm trying to do a talk show, I don't deal well.
This one says, I sat down in McDonald's on Hastings Streets in Vancouver for some breakfast. As I opened my food, the infamous Canuck Crow, not knowing it was him at the time, hopped up on my table, stole my breakfast burrito. I told the staff. They said, oh, he's here again. They opened the door and asked him to leave. He walked out the door with his head down, says this texter. You can believe it or you cannot believe it, but that is the last submission we'll get in. We thank you for your animal stories and your interaction today. It was a lot of fun. Karen, thank you very much for inviting a bird into your home.
I would just like to point out I never invited the bird into my house, Scott. He was an invader. Thankfully, the invader left pretty quickly.
Okay, we didn't get into this, but maybe in the animal world, it's like a gate. Like, that's the thing with a gate. If you have a home, if your gate is open, that is viewed as an invitation to walk down your path up to your front porch. If you close the gate, not so much. Is that what it's like in the animal world? If you leave a window open, you're inviting me to come in. Check it out. I don't know. We'll see if we can get some animal interpreters on the program. Tell us a little about that. A lot of fun today with our listeners. Big thanks to our Shohei Ohtani, Jamie Dodd, the producer of this program who chimed in earlier, Greg Ballack. Big ups back at Mission Control. We'll turn you over to the big show in Calgary. It's Bick and the Boss in Vancouver. Have yourself an incident-free, as far as animals go, Wednesday. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Oh, my God. There's a bird in my house. Oh, my goodness.